Welcome to an episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted and privileged to have a conversation with Simon Barnett. Hey, Simon, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Fritz. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Hey, let me introduce a little bit of your background. You have captured 70% of the global market in a very niche market, but the market of protecting field hockey goalkeepers, and you don't even play hockey. That's at least what I pick up when I do a little bit of research. And you've been so successful that 100% of the female hockey goalies at the Rio Olympics use your stuff, and over 50% of the men at that Olympic game. And so that's been very well recognized. We're going to talk about that. So you don't play hockey yourself. So how does someone then end up being like the world market leader, again, in a very niche field, but you live in New Zealand? How do you do that? Where did it all start?
Firstly, I've been in business for a long time. Started selling frogs to my neighbor, or to my friends, I guess, when I was nine or something, and then progressed onto guinea pigs, as we call them. And I started making table tennis tables at the age of 16, I think, instead of getting a job. And I was very fortunate that my mother said at the time, rather than saying, "Simon," when I said I wanted to make table tennis tables, she didn't say, "Why don't you go and get a job at the supermarket packing bags," or something like that, which might have been a normal response from a mother. But she said, "Oh, that's interesting. I'll tell you what," because I didn't have a car license, I needed to have raw materials delivered. She said, I'll drive the car and the trailer, but you'll have to do all the ordering of what you want, and it's up to you. So that one conversation probably made a lot of difference, not only to me, but maybe to hockey goalkeepers around the world, because my mother didn't say, don't be silly, do the normal thing. She said, I will support you in what you want to do. And that was a very good start for me. I didn't make a lot of money selling table tennis tables, although eventually that went on to selling tables in my local area, then nationally, and then decided that if I was selling tables, I also should be selling bats and balls and all the other bits and pieces. So I guess by the time I went through university still with this business and studying marketing, went on to teach marketing, but in those days anyway at a university, I could still run a business on the side. And that eventually morphed into hockey and importing hockey. And then someone, not us, invented the idea of using closed cell foam in protecting the goalkeeper. And when I saw this, I thought, oh, this is nice. You know, this is good stuff. And so really, firstly, copying the competitor. And then that got us into making stuff out of closed cell foam. And what I learned from that, I didn't even do a very good job of copying. It wasn't a very good product, frankly. But through that, learned and kind of got fascinated by this idea of making goalkeeping gear and going global and going very focused, though, which meant we had to go global. So this idea of focus and having a business that was contributing and supporting our lifestyle, my family's lifestyle, has been very important from day one. And so perhaps oddly, from a young age, I wrote down rather than just talked about my objectives. And many of those objectives in those early days were around lifestyle of flexibility and having the ability to go on holiday with my family during the summer and so on.
That's actually quite interesting to say that. So your objective was not, I want to be rich, I want to be able to afford a lifestyle.
Yeah. And okay. have a business model that supported that lifestyle rather than contradicted it. Because often you have a business, you start a business with a business model, and all of a sudden you find out you've got a pretty compromised life.
Yeah.
And so the clarity that those written objectives gave me early on was very useful. And that led into the idea that we wanted a business that had low overheads, that gave us flexibility, that wasn't overly onerous. I must say I am a complete failure in a lot of those things these days, because here we've got a brand. The brand entails a lot of obligation, maintaining a brand worldwide, a distribution into 70 countries, a factory that, until we've installed new machinery lately, used to run 24 hours a day. Fortunately, I didn't run the factory, but it's a fairly obligated and a very high, not a high overhead business, but it's certainly got a lot of capital in it. So in many respects, I've failed in those, but by having good people around me, we've been able to have a good lifestyle going into this more complex model.
For me, it sounds a little bit like a chicken and egg, in the sense that once you have good people, you can succeed. But just a question, you said, okay, you're going to be a global leader in a niche. So when you started off with that endeavor to develop kits for goalies, was that also already at that time your objective? Let's see if we can make this the dominant marketing product.
Well, it's coming back to those objectives. It started out to say, let's have a business that was not too big and not too complicated. And so that meant, let's just choose the hockey goalkeeper rather than the whole hockey market. Okay. And as soon as we said,
yeah, no, I get your point there, but just now I'm still trying to figure out, and I'm not going to let you go before you answer that question. How do you get from that dream, which I understand, to making that reality? So what has been the secret of your success to make it the dominant product in the global world, in the global market?
Right. So having decided to focus, having decided to go global, as you've mentioned earlier, I'm not a goalkeeper. I've never played in goal. I've never played hockey. And so two things. And we knew we needed the best product, because in my mind, if you've got a very fine product, then success tends to follow. And so we needed firstly to listen. So one of our slogans early on was designed by goalkeepers for goalkeepers. And that was the truth then, and it is the truth now, because we're very focused on getting, by necessity and nature now, getting feedback from goalkeepers. So everything is built around the needs of goalkeepers, both emotionally, I guess, through our brand positioning of goalkeepers are amazing people, but also from a product level. So because I didn't play, needed a lot of feedback from goalkeepers and needed to listen a lot. The other key component, I think, was that because I realized we needed a strong product, we needed to be design-led. And I'm not a product designer. I studied marketing, and that's my natural bent, maybe. So we needed to partner with a very good designer. So all Oboe products, we've had a 30-year relationship. And in fact, Oboe is characterized by very long relationships and deep relationships, I think. But Rob Whitfield, our product designer, has been involved in all our products. And he's never played hockey either. In fact, to my horror, he's hardly ever been to a hockey match. At least I've watched a bit of hockey.
So how did the people... So
being design-led and consumer-focused and focused only on the needs of the goalkeeper and listening a lot to them, and then having a very high level of and expensive input into design of products, I think is the fundamental reason why we've succeeded. Add to that the idea that marketing is important, branding is important, and I think we've been quite successful at building a strong brand as well. Hence, coming back to that phrase, goalkeepers are amazing people, a very strong position because it focuses all our thinking on the goalkeeper.
It's and actually, I'm a field hockey goalie myself. You know that because I've been to your factory a couple of years ago and love that. I'm going to go back to that as well. But I really recognize the marketing side of the product Oboe. And it's a combination of putting the goalie in the center, and it's also extremely humorous. Is that intentional or not?
It is intentional. Someone many years ago, I've had a few interesting phrases given to us over the years, I think, but one of them was that if it's been done before, it's not a brand. Now, that's a very demanding and very useful comment. If it's been done before, it's not a brand. And what that forces us to do, of course, is to be unique and constantly fresh and different. And as long as our difference is relevant to our market, then this is a useful position to take and a useful reminder. It's quite demanding because sometimes we look at things and think, oh, well, let's do that, and then realize it's been done by other people, which isn't good enough for OBO. So that really forces us to think very creatively and consistently creatively.
And I would assume that very original marketing is part of the success of making it a global brand. Have you seen copycats?
No one would be daft enough to just find a marketer out of 6.5 billion people, 120,000 or something. You know, no one's followed us in terms of saying our whole business is going to be about goalkeeping.
No, but I'm not talking about goalkeeping. I'm just referring to some quotes from your website. I mean, when you look up the contact information, I mean, general stuff, how's the weather down there? If you look at, you could say, what's the postal address? That's for send presents or teleport yourself. I mean, is that New Zealand humor? Is that Simon humor? Where does that come from?
A bit of all of that, I think. But it comes back to that point of requiring us to be a bit different. Yep. and not taking ourselves too seriously either. I think that's another aspect. And a lot changed around 12, 14 years ago when we had auditors come in. And so we normally auditors come in and look at your books.
Yeah,
we're not overly concerned with our books. I mean, they're a nice set of books, but the important thing is that we are very outward looking. So we were more interested in having a set of auditors come in to look at our product development and our marketing. And these three chaps came in for 2 or 3 days, asked a lot of uncomfortable questions, and then went away and came back with a report on us. And one of them said something very useful. He said, your product development is actually very good, and there's some things that you can do to make it a little bit better. So we had some auditors come in to look at our marketing, our branding, and our product development processes. And their comment on marketing and the company actually was very powerful to me. The auditor said, a strong person in a strong company doesn't stand on one leg of, in our case, product development. A strong person in a strong company stands on two legs, and that's branding and product development. And you're strong in product development, but relatively weak in branding. And we really suggest that you turn the volume up on a lot of your fundamentals. The fundamentals are okay, but our execution was weak. And out of that came a lot of effort to refine and clarify and make more unique, coming back to some of your questions around our humour, make sure that we were clear about what our core was for our brand, and then turn the volume up on those things. And out of that came our fairly normal, I guess, to have a brand book, but ours is not normal because it's called the Good Ship Book. And the story behind why it's called the Good Ship Book, because one of our phrases these days, and again came out of this process, is good ship that really works, which is a little bit edgy, but for our market, and except in America and South Africa, we get into a lot of trouble using the word good ship. But in most countries of the world, good ship that really works is a well-liked phrase. But when we came to name the brand book, because I brought a small team of people together to work on this branding, and one of them was a writer. And the writer, when we were sitting around talking, I must have said, OBO's a bit like good ship that really works. And she wrote this down. I thought nothing of it. But when it came back to naming of the brand book, she said, well, there's only one name that you can call this, Simon, that is the Good Ship Book. And I thought, you're right. You know, this is not maybe my natural response to naming of a brand book Good Ship, but she's right, because it is us and it is unique, and that's very important. And so out of that came the Good Ship book, which helps guide us in terms of our decision making. This is a book that's full of instructions and guidance as to how we execute our brand. So I think that's an example where the strength of the company has evolved over the years, from not being based firstly on very good product and products that really meet the needs of goalkeepers, designed by goalkeepers, but one that also has a strong brand to support it, so that we can stand on two legs.
Okay. By the way, you never played hockey, but somehow the fact that you started Oboe did rub off on your family. I mean, your daughter's now a goalie, actually in the national team, I understand.
That's true, but that's an interesting story in itself, and the fact that we're sitting here today is maybe a reflection of that as well. You know, accidents happen.
Yeah.
And good news, bad news, who knows, is an interesting phrase that myself and my family try and remember, because in many cases something bad happens, and in our case, Georgia, our third daughter, was a great soccer player, love soccer, love sport, but was represented an age group New Zealand, or was it age group New Zealand soccer player, football. Anyway, when she was 15, she went to the Nationals and injured her ACL, so she couldn't play. But because she was very keen on sport, she said to the surgeon, could I play in goal? Because in hockey, she'd done a little bit off and on as people came through Oboe. But the surgeon said, well, I've never heard of a person re-hurting themselves playing while she was recovering from this operation. I've never heard of anybody hurting themselves playing goal, so I think you can. So she's picked up the goalie gear and went, caught the attention of the national selector. And by the age, she turned 16 at the Youth Olympics in Singapore, the inaugural Youth Olympics, where New Zealand happened to win a bronze, which probably the only bronze that New Zealand will ever win in hockey. But so she was part of that team. But, you know, out of that bit of bad luck, something, a hockey career for my daughter, Georgia, who's in the national team as a goalkeeper, and is now an integral part of the company as well. So she wants to take on a lot of the challenge around Oboe in the future.
Wow. I mean, you have to be proud not seeing your own daughter on the field getting a bronze medal, but also using your own gear. That's good shit.
That is good shit. But more importantly, I think for me, our fine craftsmen, as we call them in our factory here, they also get a buzz when they can see at an Olympic Games or at a big event or any large game, something that they know they have made, because we have the ability to put logos and names and numbers on our equipment. And so they can identify something that they've actually made in with their hands and now is being used at the Olympics. And this is hard work making the gear that we make, and these are very dedicated, skilled people. Been with us for in between, I think the youngest is the freshest is 5 years, and 23 years is the oldest chap we've got in the factory. And so for them to see something that they do day on and day out being used at the Olympics is a real thrill for them. And I gain a lot of pleasure from that as well.
Now, Simon, you've just shared a lot of insight in what made you and Oboe successful. Still, a couple of things I want to explore with you, just ask your take on that, because you've been recognized winning a number of awards recognizing what you've accomplished. But I was surprised that in one of the award ceremonies, rather than just thanking everybody around you, your family, you use that for a call to action, where you say the communities don't become strong because they're rich, they become rich because they're strong. What made you make that comment at that moment? And why, I mean, it's a great comment, I understand that, but
I think this was a business award for Spirit of the Manawatu, which is our region here. And we have won many awards for design and branding, websites and business awards over the years. But this Spirit of the Manawatu was a particularly important award for me because companies have to be strong by standing on both legs of product and or service and brand and having good people, of course, but they've also got to be very good members of their community. Communities, in the end, are the family that companies have to work with in the broader sense. And so we've always been highly committed to being available to help other people, to mentor if requested others, to pay our taxes. One of our values, we're a values-led company, but one of our stated values is pay tax, so we don't shirk that responsibility. We contribute significantly to particularly housing and food in our city. So we try and share the good fortune that we've been able to generate with other people. It's partly it's selfishness, because I don't want to live in a town or live in a house that requires big fences and guard dogs and so on. I want to be able to live in a peaceful place where people are well fed and well respected. And the only way we can do that individually, the only way we can achieve that as a community is to act individually in that sort of way too. So I guess it's just like branding and a bit of humour and trying to be different in everything that we do, be a bit remarkable in everything that we do. That's all part of our DNA as a brand and a company and as people, but so is being kind and being generous in our community.
That's actually a nice segue to one of my last questions on this topic I wanted to talk to you about. I remember I just sent you an email years ago. Hey, I'm a hockey keeper myself. I'm going to be in New Zealand to do a talk. Can I come around? Actually not expecting anything. You just sent that off. So to my surprise, you replied, say, of course, you're welcome. And to my even bigger surprise, when I came into Palmerston North and found the factory, I saw the Dutch flag hanging. And that felt like, okay, I felt like a VIP walking into the office when I was just, I was amazed with that level of, I would say, detailed attention, just an unknown person just interested to come in. And I know there's a story behind the flag, but what is that? Why are you using that?
Well, firstly, Fritz, you've got to remember that you're a goalkeeper. I knew you were a goalkeeper, and goalkeepers are amazing people. So if a goalkeeper wants to come to our factory from the other side of the world, of course we'll go to some effort and give some thought to it, their time here. And so it comes back to, if you like, a core to our branding, that we treat goalkeepers with great respect, and if they want to come here, we want to give them a very good time. But we do use the flags very deliberately. We've got a flag room almost of flags. So when we're packing a container or a big order for any of our customers, we put up the flag of that country. So that does two things. It tells our staff that we're packing. We don't have many people here. We've got 15, 20 people in Obo and Palmerston North. So, and we draw from other small factories around the world for other products, but our core products are all made here. But it's a small group of people. But the small group of people know when we're flying the Dutch flag that we're packing an order for the Netherlands and so on. And then we take a photo, so that's good for us internally to know that this is going out to, we're focused on the customers and the goalkeepers in the Netherlands. But it also, then we take a photo of the flag flying, and it often flies quite well in Palmy, it's a windy place, we send that photo to our Dutch customer, the Bund Hockey, and we say, we're delighted to be able to be packing an order for you, and we're flying your flag in celebration and respect. So that makes them feel a little bit more connected to us as well. So these small things, you know, and it's only a few minutes work to do these sorts of things, but I think it has an effect both internally and externally to do that.
Now, I find these very inspiring thoughts and ideas you shared with us. So I want to thank you for that. But also, final question, where do you draw your own inspiration from?
I like making things, in a sense. I think I come from, looking back, I've had various generations of family who have made things, all quite different. And my father was a farmer, but that's sort of making things too. So I like making things and like selling things. I like trading, like doing a good job, but whatever we do should be done well, or whatever I do should be done well, and enjoy it, I think, as well. I'm this month now going to be 66, and people say, well, like say, oh, I think I should be pulling back a bit and you know, doing something else. And people say, oh, Simon, you'll never do that. And I say, why? And I think really what they're saying is that you have too good a time doing what you do. And so they can't see me not doing this, which there's some truth in, but I enjoy it.
Great.
And if you don't enjoy what you do, then you're not going to be very good at it. And newness is very stimulating too, you know, the idea of doing something differently than we've done before, and particularly if there's a little bit of fun in it, then get on and do it.
Now, what's the advice you would give to young people starting their career, starting their journey in life? What's the most valuable lesson you want to share with that those people?
Maybe it comes back to those comments a few moments ago, that find something that you enjoy. You know, I've never played hockey, as we've talked about. I've never been in goal, and yet I have a lot of fun, and we've done well selling equipment. So I think finding something that you can somehow enjoy, that is challenging, not very good at giving advice to young people, Fritz, about how to have a good life of it.
I think you are completely underestimating the amount of advice you just gave in the last 20, 30 odd minutes. There's a lot to capture, which I'd be proud of.
Yes, yeah. But you asked the question about starting out.
Yeah.
And I think having had a moment or two to think about it, choosing something that you have that you can develop a passion for, and having fun with it, but also being very focused on the consumer. Because as soon as you start looking too much inward about your situation and your needs and so on, that connection is lost. And when you focus back on the consumer and their needs, and particularly if you understand them deeply and authentically, then you're likely to do very well. Being authentic in life, particularly in today's world where there's a lot of people are not authentic, a lot of companies are not authentic, I think is probably a significant few words.
Simon, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us, with the brand called You. You've taken us along with the Obo brand. One final question. Obo, what does it mean?
Well, it now means the best goalkeeping gear in the world. It's a meaningless word. It was just made up because we needed something that was meaningless. So it was just an invention, I guess, out of my brain one day. And when I said to my wife, Fiona, what about Obo? She said, well, Obo's nice. So nice is good. It didn't mean anything naughty in any other language. It was available to us, which is important. And it's easy to say, easy to remember. You could use it globally. So that's what Obo means now, though. Okay. Goalkeepers are amazing people.
It definitely means something now. And thank you again so much for spending some time with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Good, and good luck to you and everyone that happens to watch this.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.